Earth Podcast with your host, Jake Weaver. Engineered by Cedric Swan.
Hey, everybody. We are back with another episode of Midnight on Earth. I'm your host, Jake Weaver, and we're here to bring you more knowledge, more light, and more love. What an incredible guest we have today. We have Dr. Jonathan Ellerby here, and we're going to talk about his most recent book, The Seven Gateways of Spiritual Experience, Awakening to a Deeper Knowledge of Love, Life Balance, and God. Wow, you know this is going to be good. And we're going to talk to him in just a second. But first, I need you to do something for me. Follow me on Instagram at midnight_on_earth. That is the address. You can follow me there. Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, wherever you go to get your podcasts, click that button that connects us so you know exactly what's going on immediately, instantaneously, at the speed of light. And of course, tell a friend, tell someone that you know that loves these type of podcasts. Bring them here. Bring them here. You know them. MidnightOnEarth.com. Okay, almost there. Almost going to have this unbelievable conversation because this book is so good. But first, I have to read his bio. I have to read Jonathan's bio. So here we go. Jonathan Ellerby, PhD, has worked as a spiritual teacher, ceremonial leader, integrative wellness expert, and leadership consultant for more than 25 years. With a doctoral degree in comparative religion, training as a counselor and chaplain, ordination as an interfaith minister, and certification in a variety of intuitive and energy-based healing practices, Jonathan has dedicated his life to understanding transformative spirituality and the nature of consciousness. Author of several books, including Return to the Sacred and the one we're talking about today, The Seven Gateways of Spiritual Experience. He currently lives in Vancouver Island, Canada, and by the grace of the divine, he's here with us today. Hello, Jonathan.
Hello, hello. It's so good to be here.
Wow.
I absolutely love what you do, and I do love your energy, so it's a pleasure.
Thank you. Well, we're helping people. We're bringing people to good, high-frequency information, and I often tell people that the divine experience, it's so intense and so powerful, you almost feel like you want to, like, vomit, like you feel unworthy, you want to vomit his presence. However, it's also fun and funny. We have to remind people that the divine experience in its entirety can be fun and funny. There's a sense of humor there. So here we are. So this book details seven specific gateways, kind of like these seven nodes where people's spiritual experiences tend to fall. And they're all very powerful places, but they're these seven kind of... Well, gateways, can you tell me about that more? Why are there seven and why are they these specifically?
Yeah, well, one of the things that we find in for most of humanity is that we thrive when we have some order or structure in the mental world. And spiritual experiences are the kinds of things that without any sort of order or structure can really just spin the mind infinitely in so many directions. There's confusion about what spiritual experiences are. There's assumptions about what there are. There's assumptions about what they aren't. And we have hundreds, if not thousands of years of, I would say, a steady progression towards discouraging from people to really embrace and explore consciousness. So the idea behind the book, I mean, there were several intentions, but one here is to help people get a grasp on what's possible, on what we're capable of. Let's look at the world of spiritual experience and ask the question, what is it comprised of? Is it literally 8 billion different types of experience, or do they fall into general categories? What we tend to find is virtually all spiritual experiences, although I'm always open to being wrong. They tend to fall into these seven categories or types. So the book describes them in sort of poetic language, although if I'm talking to a neurologist or a scientist, I call them SETs, S-E-T, spiritual experience type. So there's seven sets. And why does it help to know there's seven sets? Well, I think it helps because, first of all, people are having spiritual experiences all the time, and they don't even know it. If you don't know it, then you dismiss it. You dismiss a special moment, a surprising moment, an aha moment, a mysterious moment, and you miss the chance to reflect and integrate. So knowing what the categories or types are will help people to not only acknowledge what they've experienced, but to pay more attention to what's possible, to understand what to do when you have them, and certainly to better respect and integrate the diverse worldviews, spiritualities, philosophies, and even religious traditions of the world. Because ultimately, understanding these seven categories, it sounds like a big claim, it'll help you understand all that.
Of course, because the human experience includes everyone. And then you find that there are almost like archetypal spiritual experiences, yeah, like you're saying, that transcend culture, that transcend anything. And then you can see the commonality. And then you realize, my God, we're all having the same experience. Maybe we're calling it different things culturally, but we're all having it. So we're all one.
Right, right. And so here's like a deeper look at what you just said. In the worst case scenario, what we saw, and I hate to point fingers, but what we've seen over the last 2,000 years is that religions that orient around a certain type of spiritual experience have actually vilified, demonized, ostracized some of the other types of experience. And what's crazy about that is that it doesn't stop those experiences from popping up inside the very religions that reject them. So as an example, you might see in the Judeo-Christian world, a movement that happened 2,000 years ago away from the indigenous mind, away from the spirit world. Now we're going up, right? Now we want salvation upwards. No more talking to the river, no more talking to the land, no more talking to the elk or the buffalo. That's all heathen, right? That's all bad. Or of course, this was happening in the Middle East. So for example, the snake, which was a transformative archetypical spirit form, became the epitome of the bad guy. But that was a cultural device to make an existing tradition wrong. And then here's the funny part. You build this tradition out of making the spirit world wrong. And then what starts showing up over the next 2,000 years? Angels, saints. And all of a sudden, we've got all the same stuff again. We're just calling it different things so that we don't feel so bad about, you know, the genocide we perpetrated on the other people for seeing the same stuff. But in the end, I think what you're saying is, these seven categories of experience are available to everybody. And it doesn't matter what you believe or where you come from, whether you're atheistic or spiritual, these things are innate to the human experience.
Absolutely.
That means they are gateways to our wholeness.
Absolutely. And they're also gateways to understanding our commonalities and how much we can love each other by seeing our similarities. Again, if it's described differently, that's fine. You see that and it opens you up. You're like, oh, perhaps if people have those barriers. But why did we do that? Why did we put one form of spiritual experience on a pedestal, kind of minimize other ones? And again, like you said, they re-manifested and then we gave them different titles. But why did we do that? Was it some sort of ownership, a power situation? Or did we really think that because there was a valid spiritual experience in that one way, that it somehow negated the other ones as being false?
You know what? I couldn't actually say it better than you, but what I want to do for the listener is I'm going to restate what you just said because I think you actually nailed it all. In your sort of questioning there were three things that stood out for me, and I think these are the three key reasons why spiritual experiences have become sort of on the fringe of culture, although they're pushing their way back in.
Yes, they are.
So the first is, I think, very, very astute of you to acknowledge the original reason for any one tradition saying this is the way to go, don't go that other way, is quite simply because of the power of the experience. So what we find at the heart of most religious traditions is some individual who had a profound spiritual experience. And one of the hallmarks of all spiritual experiences throughout time, documented in all sociology, psychology, neurology, is the phenomena that the experience feels more real than ordinary life itself. So then what happens is these spiritual teachers, leaders, mystics, prophets, and depending on your open-mindedness, we can include Jesus, the Buddha, we can include Confucius, Lao Tzu, Muhammad, and on, they come back and they can only communicate it the way they felt it, which is, I saw the ultimate nature of reality. Here's what it's like. Here's how I got there. And that is good. And that is beautiful. And that is truthful. But then we slip into the second category. Why do we not include other experiences, right? Aside from what our tradition believes in. Well, the second is not quite so good and beautiful. And that's where the ego starts to kick in. Human nature starts to kick in. Our drive for safety, security, survival in the face of fear kicks in. And now not only am I going to just celebrate this over here, I'm going to make everything over there wrong, bad, dangerous. And you know what? We don't need to look back 2,000 years. We can just look at modern politics.
Exactly.
Right? So this is human nature. It's to take what feels good for us, that what we identify with, and then to create a sense of other, difference, division, even danger in something that threatens our identity. But there's a third thing you mentioned, and I want to highlight this because this might be more true, I would think, for people listening to you. I'd say the third movement away from spiritual experience came out of the development of material science. Now, I want to be clear, and we'll get back to this over the course of our conversation. I'm a big fan of material science. I love where science is taking us. You go to the highest reaches of astrophysics and the deepest reaches of high energy physics, and you're going to find spiritual experience, right? You're
going to
find
definitely
literal descriptions of categories, you know, 5, 6, and 7. However, just as with the innovation of any new worldview, we go through an adolescence. Like, think about that. Anytime we take on something new, we go through a period of saying, this has got to be the only way, right? So you learn how to drive a car, ride a bike, bake a cake. When you're a novice and you finally acquire some capacity and aptitude, this is the only way you bake a cake. This is the only way you drive a car. You know, you bake a few hundred cakes and all of a sudden you're like, you know, okay, you could substitute a few things. You got to see the way I drive a car, you know, like road signs or suggestions. So what's the point? The point is science, just as religion, fell prey to that kind of proprietary defensiveness. If we can't prove it, it ain't true. If I can't measure it, it ain't true. But the problem is, as that consciousness, a very masculine, hierarchical, material consciousness, dominated Western world, we started to push out everything that it could not examine easily. And that meant emotions, that meant creativity, that meant spiritual experience, altered states of consciousness, ceremony. And how do I know that's true? Well, you just look at the curriculum of any elementary school, any high school, and you'll know very clearly who's shaping the agenda. But the problem, and I'm going to wrap this long thought up now, but the problem is that in light of that, what have we seen happen to humanity? Lots of great innovations, lots of great progress, and a whole lot of nasty shit. We see all kinds of division and violence and exploitation of technology and material science at a level that is causing us to question our humanity, to return to the search for meaning, to question subtle energy, and to long for all the things we have since lost: community, sensuality, time together, the power of ritual and ceremony. And you see this grasping in the social media world, where it seems like more and more younger generations are just craving experiences of being alive. But see, the problem, if you don't have a container or a culture that understands what you're craving, well, then you're not going to really cultivate meditation or listen to Midnight on Earth. You're going to jump out of airplanes, and you're going to go to big festivals in the desert, and you're going to, you know, to take endless pictures of yourself in perfect moments on Instagram and then Photoshop them so you look happier than you are. But as we all know, it's a bunch of garbage and it leaves us feeling empty. What fills us is spiritual experience.
Absolutely. My God, that was beautiful, Jonathan. So much to unpack there. But in the bandwidth of human history,
yeah,
it's only a short period of time. Is this accurate? Tell me if this is accurate. Is it only a short period of time that we've been detached like this? And then that detachment, did that allow for the technological development to take place, which is a puzzle piece, part of our overall story? And then as we merge back, we have the high spirituality, we have the ultra technology, and then we're the advanced human race. Like, is that all part of our story?
Jake, I think that's a brilliant, brilliant phrasing of things. And it reminds me of what I call the parking lot syndrome. So let me just quickly touch on the parking lot syndrome, which is a really small insight for people. And then let's talk about what you just said. The parking lot syndrome is this: you're late for a meeting, or you're in a rush. You want to go to an appointment or an event, but you've got to run into a store or the post office, and you're driving into that parking lot and you're filled with dread, and you just pray, "Oh, dear God, angels, universe, whatever people pray to, I need this parking spot." And what do you know, right?
The it's right clouds there.
Part, a rainbow descends into the parking lot, and you've got the first spot. And as you get out of the car, filled with pride and joy and a sense of life's purpose, you say to yourself, "I knew it. I was meant to do this. I'm so guided," right? But 5 days later, you're in almost the exact same situation. You're running late for something. It's really important to you. You head into that parking lot. You start praying. You start meditating, all this stuff. And there's no parking spot. And on that day, you mutter yourself, you know, like, "Mother French fry, like, what, you know, nothing ever goes my way. This world's such a mess. Why is everyone here? That jerk parked in two spots. This place, like, the world's a mess." So what's true? Are we guided and everything's perfect? Or is the world a mess? Now, my opinion, and I think this is what you've pointed people towards, is that everything in this universe exists in the same design. And you could call it a plan, you could call it a design, you can call it a consciousness, but nothing is outside of existence. And that means everything operates within the rules of existence. Now, some things will work against that law for a period of time and then either go extinct because it's not successful and aligned, or it will give way to an innovation that then has its own life. Are you with me?
Yes.
Right. So then you just named it, which is, despite the fact that we look back and first we see what I would call the horizontal violence of one culture or religion against another, saying there's only one way, what we then see is the vertical violence, where now that this, I mean, it's kind of funny if you think about it. So imagine it almost visually. You got a world full of earth-minded, highly magical beings. And then the blossoming of these other beings, right? Put a different color or hat on them. And they start wiping out or boxing in the first group. Now they spread everywhere. And then out of their midst, because they are now a vertically minded people, right? God isn't around me. God's above me. God's outside me, right? Can't find God on the rock, the crystal. I got to find God in heaven.
Right.
But then out of this consciousness, it's a kind of breeding ground for a kind of divisive thinking that might not be terrible. What we see is the emergence of scientific thinking. And you pointed out something very powerful, which is, if it weren't for that vertical consciousness, if it weren't for the ability to be divisive, the scientific method probably wouldn't blossom. So for a period of human history, we started to exploit the other. We started to fixate on difference, on detail, on mechanics. And for all the harm it's done, I think we have to acknowledge it's also done a tremendous amount of good. The same things that are healing illnesses, that are ending forms of slavery in the world today, the same things that are being used to share concepts of social justice, it's all emerging out of technology and scale. But, and this is where I'll stop, to your point, it was a necessary period of time in which the scientific method could spread, could establish itself, its consciousness, its pervasiveness, but its time is over. And now it must give way to a reintegration of what we think of as old values, old ways, but ultimately, and this is what your show is all about, when this old way and this current consciousness come together, it will be something new that's never been on this planet before.
And I think that's human's destiny. I think that's the destiny of humanity. That's our story. And that's hard for a lot of people to understand, but I think the atrocities, and tell me what you think about this, the atrocities, the things that have happened on this planet that we've inflicted on each other, it's almost like one human being, like the entire human race is this one person. And over here, they're cutting themselves to learn not to cut themselves. And over here, they're burning themselves. And then they learn not to burn themselves. But eventually, this one organism has its own awakening and realizes that all of that behavior is destructive. And then ascension happens. It's hard for people to grasp that, because then it seems to excuse for some people. Right, it seems to excuse these atrocities. It's happening on different layers. There's different things happening. There's different sets of information in different dimensions. It may mean one thing on this layer and another thing on this layer, but ultimately it's moving forward. It is ascension. And these spiritual experiences that fall into seven different gateways, you're saying, are all leading us to that place.
Absolutely. And you said it beautifully and brilliantly. And I think it's worth emphasizing, because one of the things, one of the places we see struggle in the spiritual communities today is around the topic of appropriation. And the connection here is, what tools can we use for spiritual awakening, evolving consciousness, evolving society? And what tools should we not use because they represent a culture, a tradition, or a nation? So there's this tension, because when people have forgotten the fullness of consciousness, that the seven superstates are available to everyone, well, then what we do is we think that Eastern traditions know all about non-duality, so let's go get it from them. We think the indigenous traditions know all about spirits and energy. Let's go get it from them. But I believe that, first of all, well, obviously the book is trying to say we've all got access to all these dimensions. Let's find ways with integrity to cultivate them in ourselves. And yet what you've raised is the importance of being mindful, respectful, compassionate, and caring to the people and traditions that have quite literally been traumatized in the name of consciousness in the past. But there's one little catch that really follows your beautiful summary of what we're doing here on Earth, which is, not only did science require that ultimately brief schism in consciousness, in which what I call the horizontal, the earth-based, and the vertical, the salvific, were at odds with each other. That may have been necessary, as you say, the atrocities at some level necessary, despite how ugly and distasteful that is to say. In the same respect, we are now in a moment where healing from those atrocities will bring an emotional intelligence to the masses that we also need to move forward. In other words, facing the histories of genocide, of apartheid, of cultural oppression, this wokeness is not crippling us. It is empowering us to innovate and grow beyond the material level, in the psychological realm, in the emotional realm, in the interpersonal realm. There's no way forward without that.
Absolutely, because the only way forward is a united Earth. It is all of us awakening to the fact that even though we have differences, our commonality is the light inside of us. That light being is the same light being for every single living being and human being on this planet, regardless of their age, their ancestry, or however they show up as human beings. And that light, when we realize that, then we activate that. We know that we're all one, but that light is where we start. And then as we move down, that's how we respect each other. We're always there. The human race, we're here, we're one. But we show up in a lot of different ways. And truly, it does seem like that in the future, as we raise our vibration, as we ascend as humans, we'll look back at this time and realize that we were always one culture. We were, even though it showed up different ways with different cultural islands, you could say, these islands, these beautiful islands all over the earth. As we ascend and we unite as a family, we're going to look back and we're going to say we were always one, but we just showed up differently.
Brilliant, brilliantly said. And may I add two quick things to that? The first is that some people will hear what you just said, and because of either what they've been through or their conditioning or just where they're at in the moment, it'll sound like a bunch of garbage. But what you're revealing is that our perception is stage dependent, meaning just because someone can't see what you're saying, doesn't mean it's not true. I think that your view is right on. It is where we're evolving. And little by little, podcast by podcast, book by book, people are going to come together around it. And may I add that one of the things that's come up as a theme around the book is the question, are spiritual experiences just a mechanism for escaping life? Or do they somehow reveal something about life? And I think you've, again, said it so beautifully. They appear like escape because they're often transcendent, non-ordinary. Something in the moment of all seven experiences, it ain't like it usually is, right? There's something in the mind or something in perception that is radically different, briefly. But in those moments, all seven different moments, part of what they have in common is that an elevated perspective, just as you were saying, allows us to see the interconnection of all things, allows us to feel not only connected to all things, but in a loving relationship with all things. And so what comes out of these experiences is a natural passion for compassion, a natural movement towards care and stewardship. And here's the last piece. I actually have come to feel that if we don't start integrating spiritual experiences into our culture immediately, we're not going to reach this deadline. And the reason I say that is because we know through psychological research that it's very often spiritual experience that catapults people on the healing journey. And you'll hear this from psychiatrists and psychologists and medical doctors trying to deal with addiction or mental health issues. It's not understood yet, but more often than not, some psychiatrists would even argue it's almost universal. Most people that have a dramatic breakthrough from addiction and mental health challenges have a spiritual experience that precipitates it. And if you go beyond that, look at music, look at science, look at math. We find that non-ordinary states, dreams, intuitions, breakthrough aha moments, they are at the heart of almost all the great human leaps forward because we see something that's never seen before. It feels more real than real, and we know we need to integrate it into this world. So I would argue that spiritual experiences are the quantum leap that most of us are talking about.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Right? And it is that direct experience. And when these people are inspired, these aha moments, that's divinity. That's the divine download. They're connecting with the eternal, and that information's coming through in those moments. That's why they're so powerful. That's why they're so lasting in culture and society. And I do think that we will hit that deadline. In fact, I know we're going to hit that deadline because what I'm seeing across the board is the mainstream psychedelia is mainstreaming the powerful spiritual experiences. So for me, as a person that went out in the world and, you know, followed a lot of jam bands and went into the festival world to get my mystery school knowledge, it was those psychedelic experiences that gave me direct experience, that allowed me to have a direct pathway to the divine. So as this nationwide in America, but nationwide in our country, there's a huge push for psychedelics legalization. And when that really goes mainstream, I think that's when the mainstreaming of the powerful spiritual experiences will start happening.
Yeah, I don't disagree at all. And I think that, you know, even though I tease a bit about, you know, people going to, you know, gatherings in the desert and exploring ayahuasca and all these things, you know, I think the teasing for me is not about the actual activities. It's the fact that people are doing these things out of an impulse they don't even understand.
Exactly. There's a naivety there.
Right? But I wouldn't say let's get rid of these things. No, I'd say we need more of them. But let's go with intentionality.
Yes.
Just the way you described it. When you go, you know, it's a funny example I gave the other day, but, you know, there are quite literally millions of people all over the world who know the experience of going to an incredible musical event, getting a little drunk, getting a little high, maybe stoned on mushrooms that someone brought or whatever it is. And at some point, I'm not saying this happens to everyone, but I'm just giving a simple example. At some point, regardless of their age, regardless of the country, they kind of wandered away from the scene. They kind of flopped down in the grass for a while because they were so tired. And something just changed. They started to feel the earth breathing beneath them. They started to feel the stars turning above them. They could feel the pulsing heart and rhythm of all the people together, united in song. But the opportunity, and what I try to invite people to do through the book, is stay with that. Don't get freaked out by that. Don't sit up quickly and run back. Don't check your phone. No, that's a good thing. Relax. Relax. Breathe into it. Open your heart. Open your mind. Ask the question, what do you want me to see? What do you want me to know? And you'd be shocked. And this can happen to a guy after watching the Super Bowl, you know? And now he's in his hot tub and his belly's full of hot wings and beer. But, you know, no one thought the Chiefs would win. And now there you are in your hot tub and it's like the world's at peace. But my point is, go deeper.
Yes.
Look for the lessons. Listen. And remember that when we have these brief moments of breakthrough, of wonder, of aha, they're showing you something about life. This isn't a brain fart. This is a glimpse of the way things really are, which is beautiful, connected, peaceful, and filled with meaning.
Oh my God, absolutely. And if you lean into those, if you really lean into those experiences and follow it, you can really gain information. It's almost like your spirit guides or some sort of guidance pushing you towards that higher information, that mystery school, high frequency information that really helps people. That's how you get there. It's not about gurus or teachers, though they're all helpful, or mentors, or however they show up. Sometimes that can show up externally, immaterially. as a feeling, as a force, as guidance. Yeah. And that's, you follow that, like you said, lean into that. And that could be guidance as well. But I think people get confused. They get confused between religion and spirituality. This is like a common thing that people get so confused about. It's hard for millions of people to understand that you can have spirituality without religion. What is going on there? Explain for people that have a hard time understanding what the difference is between spirituality and religion.
Well, to be respectful, what I'll say is, from one vantage point, they're extremely different. And from another vantage point, they're same. So in the highest form, religion is just a container for spirituality. It's everything we need: a philosophy, practices, community, and teachers. And typically, when someone's on the spiritual path, I'll encourage them, find a philosophy that speaks to you and go deep into it. Find a practice that works for you and go deep into it. Find a community that supports and challenges and uplifts you and stay connected to it. And find teachers of integrity. If you can't find all of them, because that's what ideally religion should offer, then at least find one and then build the other pieces as you go. So in its ideal form, I do believe that religion was just a natural human expression of spirituality. We're pursuing this consciousness and we have this philosophy, practice, community, and teachers. However, as we know, over time, human nature has gotten the best of us. So not always, we have to be careful, but too often, religion has become a kind of vehicle of the ego, a vehicle of oppression. And what's happened is that if you lose the spirituality in religion and you're not connecting people directly to spirit, then it becomes a kind of exclusive club that, you know, you have to jump through hoops to be in, and it feels meaningless. But don't forget, it has fear baked into it, because if you don't do this, you will suffer forever. Well, that's terrifying, man. In fact, I just want to tell you a quick story. And then I want to
please
tell you what spirituality is. But this is a true story. I think it might be in the book. So I grew up in a very humanistic, non-religious Jewish household. Now, my dad wasn't actually Jewish. My dad was sort of a rational materialist, but he was, you know, he was easygoing when it came to all that sort of religion stuff, cultural stuff. So in other words, you know, I had some tradition in my life, but I didn't have a strong philosophy that I felt obligated to. So I was a curious guy. And if you read my books, Return to the Sacred talks a lot about this. You know, lots of weird shit was going down for me when I was pretty young, 10, 11, 12, seeing things, feeling things. And I remember being 14 and having this very deep conversation with my best friend in the world. You know, it was a sleepover, top bunk, bottom bunk, you know, philosophizing about life and what if this and what if that. And we were talking about something that we heard about. And I honestly think we were talking about abortion, believe it or not, at that age. And I was sort of philosophizing a little bit about, well, here's what I think the soul is. And here's why maybe it's not as bad as we think. Like, maybe it doesn't hurt the soul. Maybe the soul's not even there yet. Like, I'm just riffing, right? 14 years old, reading the Upanishads and meditating. Who knows?
Wow.
And what my friend said, like, affected me, as you know, because that was a long time ago. He said, you know, I kind of think you're right, but I can't take that risk. Like, I can't indulge that thought. And I was like, well, what are you talking about? And he said, you don't understand how I grew up. My parents are so religious. My parents are so devoted to their Christian faith, their particular Christian faith. I'm not judging all Christian faith. And he said, if I'm wrong about this, I could go to hell for the rest of eternity. I can't afford that. And I was like, what?
It's sad. I'm sorry. It's hard. Right? It's hard. I don't mean to laugh, but it's just so absurd.
I presented that to be funny, but that was the point, was that for him, he was in a moment of like very real fear because he had been conditioned to believe that there was nothing beyond religion. For me, I couldn't even imagine fitting into that box.
Right.
So the point was to go back to your conversation. Why are spirituality and religion sometimes at odds? And my point is to say, well, when religion serves its highest purpose, it is spiritual. It's beautiful. It's powerful. It makes a difference in the world. It matters. People who are religious in the healthy sense, they live longer. They heal faster. They get sick less. This is good stuff. But when it slides into that world of ego, division, fear, it's dangerous. And it has perpetrated the worst crimes against humanity that we have ever seen. Can you have that same spirituality without religion?
Yes, I think so.
Yes, I think so too. And of course, so spirituality independent of religion is when you pursue all the same things, but without the box. So that means you're driven more by spiritual experience. You're driven more by inner calling. There's a higher relationship to psychology and metaphysics. So spirituality is the innate human search for deeper meaning. And let me just add this one little piece, or two little pieces. If anyone's listening and you want to communicate with someone who doesn't think they're spiritual, what I would say is this. The human experience is built on four foundations: mind, body, heart, and soul, mental, emotional, physical, spiritual. So anything we do must have all four elements, any success, any healing. Mental is the world of thoughts, ideas, attitudes, emotions, the world of feelings and moods. The body, of course, this physical thing we run around in, we eat, sleep, rest, exercise. But the spiritual world, in my opinion, it's not a belief. You don't get to believe we're spiritual or not believe we're spiritual. We're spiritual whether you agree or disagree, because your spirituality is your relationship to the biggest questions of life. Who am I really? What am I really? What's really important? What really matters? If we live in relationship to those simple questions, then our spiritual journey, even if we begin with nothing, no spirituality, no religion, but we live in relationship to those questions, our spiritual life will unfold. We cannot exist as humans without an unconscious answer to those questions. And I would argue that as long as they are unconscious, we will suffer. And when we make the answer to those questions conscious, we have choice, we have freedom, we have perspective. And all of a sudden, I realize I've been living like a bag of meat and bones that's just going to fall into the ground when I die. But I don't need to be that fearful or selfish, because maybe I'm a part of the cosmos. I mean, literally, we are physically. Maybe I am a living expression of that same design that life blossomed out of, that mountains rose out of, that supernovas are shaped by. That's me every day. And I'm worrying because Joe at work sits close to me, or Sarah at work eats with her mouth open in the break room. Give me a break. You are a part of a living mystery that is mind-blowing and beautiful. That is your spiritual nature.
Wow. Jonathan, you're so amazing. The way you describe things is so powerful, because honestly, it's like when we let go of that fear, it frees up so much energy and we start manifesting things. That anxiety, that fear, it's not even about whether fear is the absence of faith. We could talk about that, but just the fear itself holding that takes energy, a psychic form of energy, your ethereal energy. And if we let that go collectively, like you're saying, we're manifesting more. We have so much freed up energy, so much freed up psychic energy. We're not worried about things. And now we're creating heaven on earth. Wow, we're all together now because we let go of that fear. I think that's like one of the biggest components.
Yeah, beautifully, again, so well said.
Well, we're having a great conversation, I think.
You know, I think one of the funny things, because I do a lot of, you know, coaching work and healing work that's maybe not always quite so, you know, metaphysical. and mystical. But sometimes the big question that people need to ask themselves is not how to do everything perfectly and not how to do everything right, but are there some things I need to just stop doing or that I don't need to do at all? And to your point, as human beings, though we are an expression of an infinite field of energy, knowledge, love, and wisdom, we are also in a finite experience. And psychically, and when I say psychically, like you said, I don't just mean psychically in that profound sense, but I mean like psychologically, there's just only so much you can juggle in your mind on a given day. And what if we just put to rest some of these big, as you said, fears, anxieties, worries? What if we trusted more? What if we observed more? What if we gave up control more? Well, we would definitely have a lot more bandwidth for whatever else we're doing. And that may mean the freedom of energy and speed to do new things, or it may be just to embrace the life that we do have, that we do enjoy more fully. You know, the perfect example for people listening, if you're not quite seeing this, it's your computer, you know, because your laptop, your computer, your phone, right? It's constantly operating programs. And if you open 100 little windows in your browser and you got 100 apps open, they're all open at once, your battery drains, your speed diminishes, and errors begin to occur. So what do? You shut it all down. You simplify. You focus only on what you need to. And get ready for this. Sometimes the best thing you... This is so good. This is so good. Sometimes the best thing you can do is power off. And then restart. And what happens with the average phone or computer when you power off or restart? A computer technician told me this. He said, the operating systems are built now to regulate themselves. If there are glitches, if there are imperfections, if there are problems with the program, when you shut down, your system will clean itself, purify itself, align itself, and more than that, it will download what it needs for what's next. That's what a spiritual experience is.
Wow.
It's shutting down from everyday life, exiting the ordinary, right? Having a brief moment of download, like you almost even use those words, and then we come back refreshed, empowered, and with a new perspective.
And it's so critical for actually ancient civilizations, ancient cultures, they integrated this as their daily practice. We just lost sight of that over time. This used to be a daily thing, just like magic. Like you think about Egypt and ancient Egypt, magic was a huge part of their culture. It was like an everyday thing. It wasn't ever thought of as strange or unordinary. It was just there. And it's the same way. We've lost touch with the methodologies and the functions to heal ourselves correctly and to recalibrate ourselves. But they're there if we search them out. And I'd like you to talk about some of the gateways. Can we talk about the cosmic self? I'd love to talk about that one. Tell me about the cosmic self as a gateway to the spiritual experience.
Yeah. So the just for listeners, if you don't have the book yet, and of course I know everyone's going to get.
Oh yeah. I hope so. Oh, we're going to talk about that.
And here's something I always forget to tell people. If you get the book whenever, and you send me a message through my website, I will send you a class for free. And it's how do you actively engage and begin to have these experiences like immediately.
Okay.
So it's free. So the seven experiences, we call them gateways because they're gateways to the things we long for: love, wisdom, connection, healing. But really, we're talking about seven types of experience. So the experience of the cosmic self is an experience in which you experience yourself beyond your ordinary self. Typically, it's in a dream or a dreamlike state. So what are examples? An example might be a vivid, vivid dream in which you suddenly gain consciousness in the dream. So that's lucid dreaming. And you're able to navigate history and time. That would be the cosmic self. You could have a dream that you're flying. And it felt so real. And you wake up and that and you spend the whole day. I had this dream. It felt so real. I was flying. I was leaping off the ground and gravity had no hold. That could be an experience. But it happens to people while they're awake as well. So an out-of-body experience, which we have lots of literature on, that is also a spiritual experience, or that's also the cosmic self. And probably the most, I don't know, sensational that gets talked a lot about in the media happens around death, right? So there is often a cosmic self experience around near death. So people are in a coma, people are in a car accident, and they will say, I, so they retain consciousness and a perception of form, spirit form. They'll say, I left my body. I saw the car accident. I saw myself lying on the pavement and the police rushing in. I saw, right? You hear these kinds of stories again and again and again around the world, documented by physicians and nurses and psychologists everywhere. That's an experience of the cosmic self. So it tells you that we have, that consciousness transcends the body, that self transcends the body. And in these experiences, we often, interestingly, access some of the other types of spiritual experience too.
Right. Wow. Because I don't want to go through all seven, because like you said, this book is so amazing and you get the free class. But there's, to juxtapose that, there's another one that I'd like to talk about, which is truth and beauty. See, the cosmic self, it's a personal experience, you could say. But truth and beauty, it's more of an observed experience. It's seeing the divine in nature and experience. Can we talk about that one?
Yeah. So interestingly, the way the seven experiences are described in the book is a kind of inverted pyramid. In other words, the first one is the one that is most common.
Okay.
So statistically, the more people on the planet will have the first experience. Then a little less will have the second, a little less will have the third, a little less will have the fourth, and so on until you get to the pure consciousness experience, which is pervasive around the world and throughout time, but it is much, much less common. And yet, I said that to say this about experiences of truth and beauty. We tend to think that the more common things are the less important, the less powerful, but it's not true at all. Moments of truth and beauty are, I would say, defined by profound present moment awareness, which suddenly, to make it more personal, I would say, our senses are awakened in an extraordinary way. Our perspective or perception is awakened in an extraordinary way. And for a moment, we glimpse those higher dimensions of energy, love, and wisdom in the present moment.
Right.
And you're right. It could be everyone, you know, you and a buddy are going for a hike and you're walking and talking and walking and talking. Where are we going anyway? Oh, there's a great view up here. You're walking and talking and you're complaining about something that's going on at home. And then all of a sudden, you get to the vista.
Right.
And you lose your mind.
Yeah, it pops. You see it.
Right?
Feel
just,
it.
Just 30 seconds and everything's so beautiful and so quiet. Now, if you reflect on it, what else happens in that moment? Your worries are gone. Your debts are gone. Your identity's gone. Your sense of competition and fear is gone. In a moment, the world is just beautiful and everything's going to be okay. Until your friend says, hey, we got to get back to the car. But you know, this can happen sometimes. You know, sometimes I wake up in the morning, I always get up before everyone else, not that much early. I'm not a saint yet. but I get up a little bit earlier and I feel like I want to tell you something that's embarrassing, and
that's fine.
I wouldn't say on any other show, but you have such a good
sense
of humor.
Thank you. I feel special now. Go ahead, please.
So we live in kind of a wilderness setting. I get up in the morning before anyone's up and I go outside to take a leak. But in that moment, feet on the ground. I do my thing. And then I stop. I just take a breath and I just look and I listen. And more often than not, that moment comes. Yeah, maybe before I came out, I was thinking, oh my gosh, I didn't get enough sleep last night. Oh my gosh, I shouldn't eat that bag of potato chips. Oh my gosh, my daughter's got to go off to school in a costume and we don't have a costume. In that moment, I see the silhouette of the tall pines. I hear the first birds of spring. I have this moment where I'm reminded, no matter what I worry, no matter what I fear, this is a beautiful world.
Oh, yeah. That's right? Funny. That's hilarious because, look, there's nothing more natural than allowing your body to have its functionality out in nature. Like, literally, there's nothing more natural. There's nothing more spiritual. I'm sorry. Go ahead. That's amazing.
Well, but the point is, for people listening, this could be you and your morning coffee. This could be you and walking your dog. But here's the big question, right? And I mean, this could be sports. This can be sex. This can be art. It could even maybe be your drive to work. Maybe, maybe not. But here's the question. What makes the difference? Well, sometimes it just breaks through, like grace. You're just lucky. But more often than not, there's this quality of being present. And in all the talk of mindfulness and present moment awareness, to me, the missing piece, and it's the same with psychedelics, it kind of drives me nuts. People get fixated on the mechanics. But why do they matter? Why do we want to be in the moment? We want to be in the moment because when we drop all of our past and future orientations, when we drop all of our preoccupations, the moment shines with truth and beauty.
Right.
It's a good place to be, even in a hard stage of life. If the mind is open and the heart is open and we're very present, we discover that the world is quite beautiful, that we are connected, and that there are always choices. And just to clarify my comment about psychedelics, I'm all for responsible use of psychedelics, and I'm not even, you know, going to qualify what that means, except to say, when we have a relationship with these incredible medicines, whether it's psilocybin or ayahuasca or something else, and we have an intention, a mindset, right? They say set and setting, a mindset and a safe context. These can absolutely be powerful gateways. But the preoccupation in the media is, well, we're doing research on where it affects the brain and, you know, can you grow it anywhere? And what's the chemical? Can I swear on your show?
Of course, please, go ahead.
I'm like, fuck that. Why does it even matter? Why are you interested in the psychedelic? It's not because of the chemical composition. It's because of the experience.
Yes.
Because in the moment, you experience very often category 5, divine energy. You close your eyes, you put on that headset, and you can quite literally travel the universe. And not just in a kind of false entertainment distraction kind of way, but in a profoundly connecting, revealing, healing, restoring way. I mean, these have been medicines around the world for a reason.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, it is kind of a interesting quasi-sticky situation because as these very powerful psychedelics get out for public use, it can have chaotic overtones, but people are going to have that experience. I only worry that they're going to trivialize it. Like they're going to be like, this is like experience plus. Like, okay, it's like a beer squared or something. You know what I mean? Like that's where I get a little hairy because I'm like, you know, it is still a sacrament. It may have now a package and a logo, but it is still a sacrament. You still need to approach it with intention.
So let me jump in on that because I think, first of all, I have the same feeling, but I have a little more faith about this. And let me tell you why. So people who drink a lot have the experience of being kind of tipsy, having a buzz, and suddenly everything's mellow and groovy. Okay. You're lucky if you have enough intention that alcohol can get you to a spiritual place. Unfortunately, it's not really alcohol's forte. Okay?
Not at all.
Yoga, similar. I'm going to compare yoga to alcohol. Yoga, similarly, Yeah, people are doing it to be thin. People are doing it to stretch. People are doing it so they look good. But this was a vehicle built over thousands of years, certainly hundreds, that was intended to cultivate consciousness, to heal and prepare the energy body for elevating consciousness. The point is, you can use yoga for stupid things, or pardon me, non-explicitly spiritual things. I shouldn't say stupid. You can use yoga for more selfish, ordinary, vanity reasons, or it can be this gateway to something profound. And usually for anyone listening who's done yoga, you know what I'm talking about. You get to that one moment when it's all over, whether you loved it or hated it, and you get to be in Shavasana. You're just lying there and there's a little drool coming out of your mouth and you can't quite remember how long you've been there. We know that's bliss, right? So
Yes.
what is my point? My point is that virtually every vehicle that can connect us can also be abused.
Ooh.
But the one thing about psychedelics that's so interesting, no one really can explain this yet. Some would argue that the centuries of sacrament have programmed them, or that they have programmed us. The thing that's different about psychedelics is there's a higher propensity for spiritual experience, even among those not intending it.
Yes, absolutely.
That's the cool part. So my fear is the same, which is absolutely, I don't want my son and his high school friends to go find like a giant bag of mushrooms and take so many that they're quite literally hospitalized. I don't want to see people trivializing psychedelics, and it's now just a new way to go to a concert, and that's all it is. Fine, those things are going to happen, but to your point, if this can evolve with some intentionality and an awareness of where these things can take us, and that there's validity to where it takes us. And people should know, if you're listening and you're skeptical, Johns Hopkins, Stanford, Harvard, I mean, some of the Yale, some of the most prestigious medical institutions in the country are looking at the extraordinary psychosocial, spiritual, and even physiological benefits of these extraordinary states of consciousness. So, regardless of the mechanics, we know that where it takes us is healing, is important, and restores something that's been lost due to our conditioning.
Well, yes, we do cover it quite a bit that there is a lot of research across the board with all of these huge places, like you mentioned, that are going into consciousness research. They're also going into the medical research relating to these psychedelic substances. And then on the flip side, or I guess I should say adjacent, is billions of dollars of investment money going into the psychedelic manufacture and production. So there's an explosion happening. Hopefully, I think it will. I really think they're opening Pandora's box. And once people start having big spiritual experiences and they have like MTV ayahuasca shows, like it's going to be an interesting world. We're almost there, Jonathan. But I want to talk about what happens when you go into these dimensions, you have these experiences, you go through these gateways or one of them or whichever one you go through. But then you have to come back into density, into 3D, into the feelings, the expectations, the paradigms. Tell me about that and how to process that.
Great. So that is definitely one of the things that I try to do in the book, which is to help people see this is not meant to be escaping reality. Spiritual experiences are meant to enrich reality. So people often crave the escape that transcendence provides, the cosmic view, being out of my body, feeling the energy, like you said, all these different things. But the value of them lies in what happens after.
Bringing it back.
Yeah, so reflection is necessary. Do we talk to someone about it? Do we write about it? Do we take time to simply consciously consider it? Like, think about it. What did that mean? And if that means that, then should I change the way I live? So you move from reflection into, you know, at the risk of sounding like the business consulting that I do, you move from reflection on the vision into strategy.
Yes.
So if that's true, then what? That's how we integrate the spiritual experience. If we are all one, then what does that mean when I'm bitchy to my neighbor? If we are all one, then what does that mean when I make my partner wrong every time we argue, right? If I just experienced infinite, abundant love, then what does that mean when I'm afraid of going on a date because I might be rejected? We've got to ask those questions in order to integrate the answers. So it's not enough to have the answer, to your point. The experience is the answer. But then we need to clarify it and apply it. So clarify and apply would be the little rhyme.
But it can be hard for people, though. Like, it can be like almost like abrasive to come back into this world after you've seen that.
Yeah, it is. It is. And it's worth saying, not to just make this sound so trivial. It's valuable to get some coaching around it. It's valuable to ground yourself in some practice or philosophy. And I would argue, if possible, don't do it all on your own. Get community involved, or friends or family or a therapist. And you don't have to be in years of therapy. I just mean, if you've just, like, think about how weird this is, the way we trivialize these things. You've just been given the gift of seeing the true naked face of the universe. Now I think I'm going to go eat some Cheetos, right? Like, no. Go sit for a little while. Be quiet. Be still. Write about it. Talk about it. Play music. Like, immerse yourself in it. Explore it. Dignify the experience with some mining of its meaning, and then return to it over time. In the end, that's what most religion and spirituality are. We take the insight that comes through spiritual experience, and then we build practices, lifestyle, philosophy, community to keep us connected with what we've been shown.
Wow. Super important. You know, one of our guests feels like all of the things you're talking about, those pursuits, are a religion into itself. He wrote a book called American Metaphysical Religion, where he detailed the history of this gentleman, Ronnie Pontiac. I highly recommend it. It is a true pursuit, though, because it strips away everything. It strips away all the dogma, all the paradigms, all the old world, new world, and it gets strictly to life, you, and source. And that's where you're drawing your spiritual experience from.
Yes. Yes. You said something very important that, interestingly, a lot of great, you know, saints and mystics and gurus have said over the years, which is that while grace or synchronicity or blessing is a part of the equation on the spiritual journey, meaning you can't control it, you can't force it, you can't make it happen. In fact, I have a funny story. I don't know if you want to hear this, but it's about manufacturing spiritual experience. But what they have said, and the guru in India, Ramakrishna, I love that fellow's writings and teachings. You know, he says that the devotion, the dedication to the path, the desire for the connection is as important as anything else. So you don't just go to church. You don't just go to yoga. You don't just go to your sweat lodge. You don't just go to your psychedelic ceremony. You go with your full heart, your full mind, your willingness. You know, a mentor of mine used to always say to me, if what you're asking for is life itself, a better life, awakening, connection, healing, what are you holding back? What wouldn't you give to have those gifts? But you know, the way our culture is these days, as we get younger and younger, with all due respect, like, this thing about investing yourself in something is becoming more rare. You know, it's like, well, I know it's my job, but it's not always going to be my job. So I'm not going to bust my ass. Yeah, bust your ass. And the same is true on your spiritual path. What you put into it, I absolutely believe you get out of it. The universe, for lack of a better word, pays attention. And if you can have that sincerity, not control, not clinging, not attachment, but drive, passion, commitment, I absolutely believe the spiritual world will show up for you. Absolutely.
Yes. I mean, it's been proven time and time again. When people have the right intention, they're focused, they're loving, they're truthful, they want it. They want it at the core. They want it, and not in an egotistical way. They want it for growth so they can expand their service. They just want to be a better human for other people. That's when the magic happens. Then things start coming to you. You set up an attractive force, and all of these spiritual things start coming to you. And then you have to follow that even more. You have to process that and be like, okay, what does all that mean? That means it's leading to something. What's the next step? The next step. And so adding to that, what is the next step for humanity? Because we're having these spiritual experiences where it's escalating. It's escalating around the world with the internet, with information moving so fast. All of this is escalating. What is it building towards? Do you see it building towards something?
Well, I do. And I think you do too.
I do. But I want to hear what you think.
Yeah. I think we see the same thing. And the way I phrase it for people is that this vertical consciousness that I talked about earlier, which I also call masculine, not male. It's not about men, but masculine, meaning hierarchical, outward going, conquest oriented, striving, discerning, analytical, that this will come into balance with what we would call the horizontal or feminine, the collective, the communal, the process oriented, the creative, the internal, the spiritual. And what we will see out of these two is the potentiation of each other. And of course, the emergence of principles of society and thought and culture that we've never even seen before.
So beautiful.
Because now we're talking supercharged culture. Take AI and love and psychedelics and social justice and regenerative farming. You put all that shit together in a blender, it's going to be pretty cool. But it's not going to happen as easily as we would like. There's going to be a hell of a fight from those who have something invested in the old consciousness. Mm. And I'm going to say something that some people won't like, but that's the only thing that's happening in American politics today. There is very little evolution. There is very little innovation on either side.
It's the same people as last time.
it's just such a waste of energy. You see other countries around the world innovating in education, innovating in jobs, innovation in wealth sharing, innovating in environment, ecology. And what we have here is one group that is representing the liberal, inclusive future, although they don't totally understand what that means. And then one group that represents the conservative, materialistic past. And in the end, all they do is fight. And so they represent nothing.
Right.
It's a waste. But why did I say that? I said that only to say, I do believe that a beautiful future is possible. I do believe it's the kind of thing that you're sharing on your shows regularly. But we also have choices to make about whether we're going to help move us over this threshold of tension and resistance, or whether we're going to be complacent. And I don't mean we need to get out there and start fighting, but we've got to contribute to the kind of world we want to see. And whether that's you just doing your own spiritual work at home, or expanding your understanding of kindness, or just becoming a more responsible consumer, that's ultimately going to be a part of that solution. Without that, and the quantum leaps that spiritual experiences bring to us, I'm not convinced we're going to get there. I know there's a beautiful place we can get to, and I think we have everything we need.
I think so too. We have all the pieces, but some people, and we've had such a great conversation. We could go on for hours. I just have a few more questions. Some people.
Okay, I'll be shorter.
No, I love this. You go as long as you want. There's no time limit on this.
There's no time and space.
Exactly. This is absolutely perfect, but I just want to help people that start to put these spiritual experiences through like a rational mindset. And then they start talking about, well, it's biology. Well, it's physiology. Well, there's these different things happening. Now, in your book, you talk about this. You say that science only has theories related to the spiritual experience. It can't explain it. And then human physiology, I believe, is the gateway, not the explanation for the spiritual experience. Like it's like the DMT that's in our brain, the meditation, it allows us to access these other realms, but it's not like why those other realms are being perceived. It's the access points.
Right. Right. So to say it differently, the debate is there an experience that's registered in the brain? Or is there a brain experience that creates the illusion of an experience?
Right.
But I have an interesting perspective, which is, why does it matter? Because because in either case, if what is being perceived resonates in harmony with what we know about physics and math and psychology, then there is truthfulness to it.
Right.
So yes. I don't care what came first, the chicken or the egg. I'm eating the omelet, man. It's like,
well, that reminds me of something Ram Dass said very quickly. He just would visualize having meetings with his guru that had long passed. And someone said to him, well, you're just imagining that. And he's like, well, okay. I'm hanging out with my guru. This is amazing. Like what? But go ahead. I'm sorry to interrupt.
So let me move on to something else though, which is that, you know, I am in dialogue with some neurologists right now. In fact, I'm going to share something on your show. It's a bit of a pitch, but we have an interesting opportunity. When I say we, I mean, we society,
okay,
which is that an Ivy League university has, I'm in conversation with, and if we can raise the funds, we are going to begin a study of the human brain and the aptitude for spiritual experience in a way that's never been done before. Not only are we going to look into these seven experiences and their correlates with material science, but we're going to look deeper into this thing that you're talking about, which is, are certain brain structures predisposed to spiritual experience? And if so, kind of coming along the lines of what you brought up, is it possible that just in the way birds perceive energy lines that they follow in migration, and just the way elephants can feel things moving on the land at a distance through the pads on their feet, is it possible that what these different brain types are showing us is that they are capable of seeing things that other people don't see only because they don't have the tools? And that if we all had the same tools, or you might say brain types, that we would actually see the same things. And there's some interesting early research to suggest, for example, that people that are neurodivergent may have a greater capacity to perceive these other realities. So if you listen to the way it's being said, they are not just more prone to weird perceptions. They may be perceiving other aspects of reality. In other words, we have more senses than we know. And we even have verified that in biological science. Most biologists now would argue that we have about 20 senses, not 5, not 6, 20.
Really?
And more than that, yeah. Really, it's crazy. You just look up how many senses are there, really. Of course, you'll get all the elementary school answers.
Wow.
Senses. But just put in something like, if you're searching it, you know, leading science, how many senses do we really have? You'll be blown away. The other thing, just to keep hitting on this science thing for a minute, we now know through solid physics that there is no way to actually explain the phenomena of this world with the phenomena of this world. What we know through the scientific lens alone tells us there must be other dimensions. And if you look at the work, for example, of Donald Hoffman, who talks about high energy physics, what they're showing, this is like mind blowing, what they're showing, and I'm not talking armchair quantum physics, I'm not talking spirituality, I'm talking about high energy physics. What they're showing is that we can now perceive reality through tools that take us deeper than what is known as the Planck scale from the physicist Max Planck. That means that we can now see beyond the tip of the iceberg. And it turns out, this is crazy, the quantum realm, not just the physical realm, not just the Newtonian realm, the quantum realm is now being pushed and considered the tip of the iceberg. We used to think with movies like What the Bleep that the quantum realm was the big sub realm that we all need to get to. And these physicists, not spiritualists, the physicists are saying that shit's the tip of the iceberg. Oh, and you want to know what's beneath it? It's a dimension beyond time and space. And I'm not even making this up. What that tells us is that the majority of objective material reality, according to math and physics, is actually beyond time and space.
Wow.
Good Lord.
Right? You're blowing my mind right now.
It's crazy. But what's the point? The point is that what is reality is a question that's fascinating physicists, scientists, chemists, biologists, mathematicians. And the only thing they're finding as they go deeper is that these experiences, like the ones in the book, pure consciousness, formless, whatever, formless spirit, divine energy, this shit is now under the microscope. And they're seeing it too. So I think this conversation, I don't even know how you introduce it, but this conversation about the brain and spirituality, it's important.
Science is coming around.
Spirituality, yeah. We're going to converge on some extraordinary things. And guess what? Because we're in an infinite universe, the further we go, the less we'll know. And that will always be cool.
Yes. And then to integrate all this, you get all this information, you integrate it, you realize the vastness, the infiniteness, so much information, so much. At that point, do you feel like it's important to just say, I'm here to serve? Like, I'm just going to help this human experience blossom. And like you said earlier, any way that I can, whether it's just being sweet to the people around me, whether it's just developing myself to be a more loving person, whether it's volunteer, however it shows up, it can be small scale, it can be big scale. Is that the purpose? When you start to grasp all of this high frequency information, it always boils down to service. What do you think about that? Is that the point?
So I'm going to answer this three ways and I'll try to be efficient.
Okay.
The first, in my years of speaking, I've done lots of research on different topics. When you look up the word service in the context of spirituality, hands down, blows everything else away. God, compassion, service is it. Hindu, Christian, Buddhist, Jewish, metaphysical, spiritual, so there's no question throughout time, human beings have converged on service as a path of awakening and connection and self-healing, period. So that's one. Two, in my own experiences of spiritual experience, abundant love and profound connection are always core qualities. Therefore, yes, for me, when I go out in the world, if someone's on the side of the road or someone wants to get the last kumquat, whatever it is, their happiness is as real as mine. Their health and safety is as real as mine. And this level of altruism, embracing what some call the we-go and not the ego, is what's going to move us forward. And again, it's powerful for self-healing. But here's the last thing I'll mention. There's a clever trick built into our universe that I friggin' love, which is that we know biologically and neurologically, we are predisposed to self-protect. The brainstem, which is the oldest part of the brain, is hardwired to be fearful and self-protective. How is that a good thing? Because it's leading to wars and greed and exploitation of the planet and people and animals. That shit's, pardon me, fucked up.
Very much so.
But here's the beauty. If we are built to defend ourselves and our identity, What happens if we redefine the self? Oof. Right? What if all of a sudden I put all that protective urge to protecting you, to protecting the ocean, and to protecting my neighbor, and protecting people I've never seen, and to protecting my children's children's children? You see, when a spiritual experience expands your identity so that you and the world become one, then all of a sudden that archaic impulse to protect becomes the driving force of service.
Oh my God. Well, right? I mean, what you're talking about, it's almost like hermetic philosophy. It's like using one universal law to cancel out another one to create the desired effect. I mean, the reptilian brain, that lower brain function, it's immutable. But we can expand the self-perception to then use that thing to rocket us into love, to universal. Yeah. Oh my God. Jonathan, you have just been dropping knowledge bombs on us. Like, you wouldn't believe these love, compassionate information nodes. I definitely appreciate this. What an incredible conversation we've been having. I really appreciate you being here. We could really go on for hours, like I said earlier, but I know we do have some sort of time limit. So I do want to tell people where to find you.
Please do.
JonathanEllerby.com. And I'm going to spell this. Jonathan, JonathanEllerby. Ellerby, ELLERBY, JonathanEllerby.com. You can go there. You can learn about the books, The Seven Gateways of Spiritual Experience that we're talking about today. But he has other books, Return of the Sacred, Inspiration Deficit Disorder, The Gentle Art of Spiritual Discernment, The Promise of Paradise, an audiobook, Your Spiritual Personality, and people. You know how powerful this conversation has been. It's been mind blowing. So you know this guy's amazing. So he has coaching. You go to the website, there's coaching. You want him to coach you personally? He can do that. He has a weekly class. You can learn about that on the website. It's free, totally free. Weekly class, totally free on the website. He has a podcast. You know we love podcasts here, the Jonathan Ellerby podcast. And he's going to Africa in 2025.
Oh, yeah.
He's leading a spiritual retreat to Africa. Tell us just a very, very little bit about that.
So we take small groups to extraordinary locations. They are luxury locations. It's a big investment. We get people hands-on with culture, meeting traditional healers. We're immersed in safari, experiencing wildlife and nature in the most incredible, mind-opening, heart-expanding environments. And best of all, and I just confirmed this morning, we get to be hands-on with conservation work. And in 2025, we will be working with the rhino poaching program, and we will be a part of protecting the black and white rhinos. And last year, like just a few months ago, I was there. And it was the whole thing right out of the movies. Me and our group, the helicopter came, they darted the rhino. We followed it with jeeps. We got into the bushes, covered the eyes, blocked the ears, took the blood samples, cut off the horn so that the poachers won't kill them for the horn. I'm telling you, these trips are unbelievable if you can happen. But I will also mention, I have a newsletter that's not very obnoxious. I send reminders about the class. I send reminders about Africa. And there's always like a video or something free, some content that you get every week. So that's worth signing up for.
Absolutely. I totally agree. I'm going to sign up for that. This has been such an epic conversation. You are such a loving, bright light. Your book is amazing. There's personal stories. You talk about the seven gateways. There's so much there. Everyone should go out and get this book. Amazon, anywhere you can get books, really, and the other books that are there. What a conversation we've had, man. Thank you so much. You've been amazing.
Jake, you're the best, really.
We've got to do this again. I only got through half my notes.
All right, let's do it again. Thank you so much for having me. You're so great.
Thank you. Is there anything else you want to leave our audience with before we go?
I just want to say the world needs more of Jake.
Well, we need more Jonathan Ellerby. And people listening, we need you. We need you to activate. We love you. You can do it. You can activate. Join us. Let's activate the human race and let's just get to that place where we're in love with each other again. It's not that hard to do. It's just a shifting of awareness and perception. That's all. Well, thank you again, Jonathan.
All right. Take care. Yes. Thank you.
Please hold through the outro music. And everyone, check out the book. Check out the website, jonathanellerby.com. This has been a legendary episode. They're all great. This one's been amazing. We'll see you next week. Midnight on Earth.